Thank you, ma'am. Good morning to all. As noted to the court, I will be proceeding this morning on the portion of the brief dealing with the car stop, the second argument in the brief. And just to reiterate, I did file a letter pursuant to 28J with the court concerning a recent, very recent decision of the Supreme Court, United States v. Jardines, which I think breathes new life, or perhaps breathes life into the argument that I'm making.
Well, now let me stop you. I thought you were just challenging the initial stop. Are you? Because the Supreme Court case had to do with the dog sniffing.
That's right.
And that didn't really occur until after the initial stop.
That's quite correct. There was an initial stop, and even if we assume arguendo that the initial stop is legal, and the dog is brought to the vicinity, circles the car. Now we have a new dimension, I think, from Jardines, which is the dimension of the dog actually entering the car.
Okay, but I thought your argument was that the initial stop for the Maryland traffic violations was just a ruse, and that you weren't challenging the subsequent search. Am I wrong?
Well, that was initially, I think you are correct, but I think that under the prevailing law at the time that the brief was filed, I think that U.S. v. Caballes pretty much disposed of the notion that once there is a legal stop, whether it's pretextual, in quotes, or not, the police have the right to bring in a dog to make a scent search, a sniff search, whatever you want to call it, and that is not a search, considered not a search within the under the Fourth Amendment. I think that the decision in Jardines, which cites Jones, this court's decision as well as the Supreme Court's decision in Jones, puts a new wrinkle into the equation, because now it says that there are intrusions into property that are Fourth Amendment violations without regard to expectation of privacy, that these are property intrusions that we as a society do not countenance. And Jardines, of course, was in the context of a house, and I recognize that houses always, home is your castle, and there's always a preference given to protecting one's residence. But I think that just as in Jones, where the intrusion was on a car, that the use of the dog to actually enter physically into the vehicle to make his final determination, if you will.
The problem is, your brief at least said it's not the use of the dog that contravenes the Fourth Amendment, it was the initial stop. So I think what Judge Henderson was getting at is we've focused our attention on analyzing your challenge to the initial stop.
Right, and I had hoped that the 28J letter and drawing the attention to the Jardines case would alert the court that the argument was going to proceed somewhat along those lines. The timing of the filing of the brief, obviously, and all the papers were in long before Jardines was decided. If the court would want to have the matter rebriefed based on Jardines, that's certainly one way to do it.
Well, is your position that you're making a claim based on the Supreme Court decision that wasn't available to you before?
That's quite correct.
Okay.
Quite correct. Just as it wasn't available to Jardines before it was made. I mean, obviously it applied to Jardines' situation, and I would argue by implication that it applies to Mr. Watson's situation. The development of the law, we start with Wren, and Wren was a case originally decided by this court, and then decided by the Supreme Court, and an unfortunate decision, at least in my view, because what Wren does is it basically says that anybody who turns on the ignition of their car and drives any short while is probably subject to a stop for one reason or another, a blown taillight, a faulty brake light,
what are we supposed to do?
Well, I'm not going to ask the court to reverse Wren, obviously.
That's what I mean, but on the facts of this case, given your introduction and description of Wren, which I understand was for emphasis, but that does seem to cover the stop here.
Well, that's why I'm saying, assuming arguendo that all of those things are true, for purposes of today's argument, what I'm saying is that the Caballes rationale no longer applies to it's not simply a dog circling a vehicle. to make a determination whether there's contraband in the vehicle. This is a dog that that the final coup d'etat, if you will, is to jump into the vehicle and make his try to sit down, which is his sit response, I assume, to indicate the presence of narcotics. He's apparently foiled by the seats in the car, but on this record, it would seem that that the entry into the vehicle, why the dog is required for the dog to detect narcotics. And the argument obviously now is that that is an intrusion into property, that is whether it you call it an expectation of privacy or something other than that, is violative of the Fourth Amendment. And I think that even though cars are, as I conceded earlier on, cars are different than homes, one couldn't argue otherwise. I think that the notion that there'd be a limited inspection by the dog of a car that was stopped for reasons quite apart from a narcotics probable cause. I think in the hearing, the officers did everything they could to try to bootstrap it somewhat, but it's clear that the tip or whatever information they had was insufficient by itself to engage in a stop and search of a vehicle. You have nothing about where the basis of information, the reliability of the source, the standard things that would support the stop and search of a car for a drug search. Similarly, the other things the officer noticed, a single ignition key. Well, in a car that's not your own, I don't think it would be so unusual for someone to be driving it with just an ignition key rather than the keys to someone's home, office, and whatever else they might have. The court will recall this was a borrowed car. The car belonged to the appellant's brother. The things that are extraneous to the dog clearly don't make probable cause and don't justify that kind of intrusion into the car's interior. Just to backtrack for one moment, I think that under the facts of the entire case, the seizure of the kilogram of narcotics constituted the only direct seizure of drugs from the defendant. Everything else was somewhat circumstantial in terms of some trappings of wealth, notion of others, intermediaries perhaps acting for him. But this was a dramatic event because this was the one time a significant portion of drugs was put in the defendant's possession. And for that reason, I would argue that that an illegal search concerning those that particular item would be could not be harmless beyond a reasonable doubt, and would require that the verdict be vacated and be sent back to the district court.
I have one detail on it. Do we know what this license plate cover was?
I'm assuming, from my recollection, it's a plastic cover that it's not the kind of cover that's designed to obscure a license plate. It's a plastic cover. I've seen them in many jurisdictions. I've seen them around here. I don't know why people want them, but seemingly it's an accoutrement sure. You can put on your car, and people like things like that.
Is it clear and goes over the whole plate?
That's my understanding. Oh. It screws on with the frame, and it protects your license plate from the elements or something else. I don't think it's designed as a blind, as a like putting a masking tape over your license plate to disguise it. I think it's a decorative kind of thing, and it has whatever utility you might have.
Well, that's what I was driving at. It wasn't like, UNC basketball championships 19-something or other. I mean, it's just a plastic.
I don't think you have to go back that
cover.
Far. But,
yeah, you're right. Just a cover over the entire plate.
Right, it's a clear plastic cover that
okay.
protects the plate from the indignities of the road, I guess. And if the court has no other questions, that's my argument. I did save 2 minutes, I think, for rebuttal.
Uh-huh. Okay. Mr. Schaub.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. Jonathan Schaub on behalf of the United States. The defendant has not preserved any Fourth Amendment challenge to the admission at trial of the kilogram of cocaine discovered in his van. But even absent issues of waiver, his arguments lack merit. In his opening brief to this court, the defendant, as Judge Henderson noted, challenged only the initial stop of the vehicle as lacking probable cause or reasonable suspicion. However, in the district court, in the suppression hearing before trial, The defendant specifically said that there had been no Fourth Amendment violation until the dog entered the car. Thus, under this court's decision in Hewlett, waiving any argument based on the initial stop of the van under Federal Rule of Criminal Procedure 12b3c. As Judge Kavanaugh noted in his opening brief to this court, defendant also asserted that it was not the use of the dog that violated the Fourth Amendment. The defendant relies today on the Supreme Court's decision in Jardines, but Jardines did not announce a new legal principle or substantially alter the legal framework that would justify this court relaxing its normal rules of forfeiture and waiver. Jardines dealt specifically with the entry of a dog onto the curtilage of a home and did not deal with the situation we have here, which is a dog used in a traffic stop. Even absent those issues of waiver, however, the arguments lack merit. Every circuit to have considered the issue has held that a dog's entry into a car following the scent of narcotics, when it jumps into the vehicle through a window or door or sticks its nose into the vehicle, does not violate the Fourth Amendment as long as that entry is not facilitated or encouraged by the officers on the scene. This court has not addressed the question, but every circuit is unanimous that has addressed the question, and that's four circuits. Similarly, even setting that aside, the district court realized, which is true below, the dog alerted before it entered the vehicle. And the district court said there was probable cause to search the vehicle before the dog even jumped in. Under that scenario, it does not matter whether this court finds that the entry into the vehicle constitutes a different kind of Fourth Amendment analysis, because probable cause existed, thus giving the officers reason to search the vehicle and discover the cocaine. The Supreme Court's decision in Harris, which came out a month before Jardines, specifically said that, viewed through the lens of common sense, the facts surrounding a dog's alert would make a reasonably prudent person believe that a search would discover contraband. Those facts are present here, and we would submit that there was no Fourth Amendment violation.
So at a routine traffic stop for a speeding violation, the police can't put the dog in the car?
Your Honor, the dog's entry into the car came about because he was following his own scent.
I altered the facts as you described them here for purposes of my question, which was they put the dog in the car.
Your Honor, I believe under the court's analysis and the other court's decisions, it would probably be a closer case. I'm not sure it would be a Fourth Amendment violation because, as Justice Kagan noted in footnote 3 of her concurrence, the car has always been subject to much less protection than the home. In the case where the officer does not put the dog in the car or even facilitate entry, I think the answer is clear that it's not a Fourth Amendment search. If the officer physically lifted the dog and set him inside the car, I think the analysis would proceed differently. Mm-hmm. But this case does not present that issue. The handler testified, the officer testified, that they didn't even give the dog an instruction to search. The dog simply alerted when he became close to the vehicle and followed the scent into the vehicle, the door of which was left open by the occupants when they exited. So the officers did not open the door or the window or anything like that.
What if the car had not had either this covered license plate or whatever the second thing was, and the officers knew that knew the drugs were in there, had the dog close by, what would you say then?
Well, the initial stop would have to be justified. Here, Officer Johnson observed the van following too closely, as well as observed the tinted license plate cover. So they would have to justify the initial stop for some reason. They did have information from dispatch that a van matching this description would be traveling on this highway at this time. But as long as the initial stop were justified, then the use of the dog would present no problems.
Would it be justified if they hadn't had those two traffic violations, following too close and the covered license plate? Would the information that this car, we think, has drugs in it, here's the description of it, and he had stopped it?
I think it likely would, Your Honor. The Supreme Court decision in Florida v. JL is the most direct on point about the tip here. The officer testified in the suppression hearing that he was not aware of its source, so it would probably be regarded as an anonymous tip. And for anonymous tips, JL is the governing framework. What JL held was when a tip that an individual in a plaid shirt standing at a bus stop would have a gun, that was not sufficient because it didn't show any predictive information about the suspect's behavior and distinguish its previous case in White, which was a traffic stop case. And I think this case would be distinguishable from JL because the anonymous tip specifically said the van would be traveling in a particular interstate, a particular route. It gave information about who would be in the van, including children. It named the license plate, the make and model of the van. And so that information in aggregate would probably constitute reasonable suspicion. We would grant that that would be a closer case. This court has not had many cases on anonymous tips since JL, none that would be similar to those kind of facts. But we do think it would still be justified as a reasonable suspicion.
All right. I want to ask you about a different argument that the defendant makes about Officer Margolis's testimony. About he testified that these items had cocaine residue on them. And I didn't see any, that there was any foundation laid for that testimony. That is, that this officer had experience in that area.
Yes, Your Honor. I don't believe the officer would need experience in that area. So in this case, Officer Margolis, take an ordinary layperson who enters a home on the suspect, suspected of narcotics trafficking, with that information. I don't think we have to throw out all of this information. So he goes into the home. He knows this person is suspected of cocaine trafficking. He knows the time of the search that he's been pulled over and has found cocaine in his vehicle. He goes into the home and he sees digital scales, baggies, razor blades, the kind of paraphernalia often.
Well, no, he can identify all of that, but where did his ability to say that the residue was cocaine come from? I thought that was based on his experience as a police officer.
I don't think so, Your Honor. I don't think he did not testify that it was in fact cocaine. He simply said that there was a substance that appeared to be cocaine on the scales. He said it was consistent with cocaine. He never actually said it was cocaine, which would be consistent with a layperson seeing drug paraphernalia with a white powder on them. Further, any error in that case, if Your Honor was concerned about it, is clearly harmless in this case because the government didn't put on the forensic analysis who said it was, in fact, cocaine found on those items. If the court has no further questions, thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Sussman has...
Just briefly. In terms of the description, there was a Nissan van described traveling south on Route 95. It was about as generic a description as one could get. And there was some information that there was going to be 30 kilograms of cocaine in it. This van was going to be stopped. There was no doubt, and it should be no doubt in anyone's mind, this van was going to be stopped. And the description was fairly generic, and there was, I would submit, no probable cause based on what the police officer knew. The other thing that I think is.
But how can we second guess the following too closely? I mean, that ultimately.
Well, I think that that's the weaker of the government's arguments because the standard was
The tinted license plate and the following too closely. We don't have a case.
The tinted license plate is admittedly a problem because of the Maryland. I mean, it creates a horrible thing for someone from out of state, you know, especially from Alaska. That's 16 states or something like that that you have to. Qualify and know the motor vehicle rules as you drive cross country, but the following too closely was clearly a vague standard. 10 miles an hour for a car length or something, and the standard was they say. I mean that's a standard I remember from my childhood about the they say that one should do this. I would think that that's far too vague to justify a stop. There's nothing reported that there was any safety problem observed or anything of that nature, and that would certainly justify stopping everybody on Constitution Avenue at 5 o'clock, because nobody is following two
Everyone
or three cars.
95 too.
Probably, and if you went to California, you could just stop the five, and nobody would be making progress. I think it's important also to note that when it's unclear from the record. If the dog had indicated exactly what was the situation before jumping in the car, why does the handler let him jump in the car? I mean, if it's over by then and it's clear to the officer that there's probable cause, then is it just rewarding the dog? Or I think the record's somewhat unclear as to what is the exact indication, because the dog attempted a sit response in the car, and that's clear on the record.
Can I ask you one question on ineffective assistance? Usually we remand those, but here I'm not sure there's any reason to remand because I don't think there's much of an argument on venue. being improper in D.C., given the overt acts that occurred, Reed's overt acts that occurred in D.C. Can you respond to that?
So is the court asking for surrender on that particular issue?
Not surrender.
I think it's a legal issue that the court can decide without any remand on that particular issue. Thank you.
All right, Mr. Sussman, you've been appointed to represent the defendant. We thank you for your help.
Thank you.